This is Little Red Mitts, a Stranger Things fanfic written by Envy Envy and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated G and is Jen, featuring the relationship between Robin Buckley and Steve Harrington, with additional tags for pre-season 4, Fluff, platonic soulmates Robin Buckley and Steve Harrington, aromantic Steve Harrington, aromantic Robin Buckley, queer platonic relationships, snow, literal sleeping together, non-sexual intimacy, light angst, just 4,000 words of Stavin being soulmates at 4 a.m. Summary. Steve and Robin enjoy the first snow of December 1985. This story is part 2 of the series, Arrow Stavin Cinematic Universe. It's just past 4 a.m. when Robin shifts in her sleep and buries her cold nose in the crook of Steve's neck. The chill stings a little bit, and it drags him from a weird dream he'd been having about the Demogorgon in his Scoops Ahoy uniform, complete with the matching sailor hat. Steve scrunches his face with a little noise of protest and pulls Robin closer against him with the arm around her waist. She snuffles, but doesn't wake up. Her left hand has a death grip on his shirt. They'd learned pretty early on that he needs to wear some kind of top to bed if he wants to keep any of his chest hair. And her right arm is wedged between them, pressed alongside Steve's left, their pinkies locked like a promise. Distantly, drowsily, Steve thinks he'd like to spend every night like this for the rest of forever. He dozes for a bit, not really awake, but not able to go fully back to sleep yet either. It's weirdly bright out for December, and he doesn't need to check the clock to know sunrise isn't for hours. He wants to sleep. He's still dead tired, and they have work in the morning. But the combination of not wanting to dream about slinging ice cream with the Demogorgon, and the nagging feeling that it really is too bright, drag him all the way to wakefulness. With a resigned little sigh, he opens his eyes. Immediately, he can tell that, yeah, he was right about it being bright. It's not daylight, though, or any of the neighbors. It's too soft for that. Too white. It looks like moonlight. And when he turns to look out the window, he realizes that's exactly what it is. Moonlight reflecting off snow. "Robs," he whispers, shaking her gently by the shoulder. "Bobs! Hey, Bobbin!" She scrunches her nose, burrowing closer with a little like a cat. It's very cute. He loves her so much. "Robbie, wake up," he says, just a little louder, watching the way her eyebrows furrow at the noise. "It's snowing."
"No, it's not,"
she mumbles, her breath puffing against his skin.
"Shut up."
Steve laughs, and she groans, letting go of his shirt to rub at her eyes.
"Loud," she grumbles.
"Rob, it's snowing."
"You're snowing."
"Robin."
She sighs, opening her eyes to glare up at him. He gives her a winning smile.
"Fine,"
she says, and rolls over. Steve whoops and wanders over to his dresser to find something warmer to wear. Robin kicks her feet in annoyance, but climbs out after him.
"Oh my God, Steve," she says,
pausing to press her face to the window.
"It's snowing!"
Steve throws a sweater at her face.
"Shut up," she complains, completely fumbling the catch so she has to bend over and pick it up. "I just woke up, like, less than a minute ago. Give me another 5 to process that this is the first snow of the season."
"You can process all you want while we're outside," he reasons, pulling on another pair of socks. "Hurry up."
"You're such a rude little man," she says, then lunges at him to grab his offended face in her hands and plant a wet kiss on his forehead. She reaches behind him to steal some of his socks and a pair of pants, and dresses in slow, exaggerated movements, because she knows it drives him crazy. Come on, Rob, he whines, and she laughs, jumping up to link their arms together. They stumble down the stairs together, listing a little this way and that as they try to figure out their balance while they're still half asleep. Robin misses the last step and almost faceplants, and it's only Steve's monster-honed instincts that keep them both from collapsing into a heap on the floor. It isn't until they're side by side, staring into the coat closet, that they realize there might be a bit of an issue. You only have one winter jacket? The look Robin gives him is highly judgmental. I could have sworn there was another one in here somewhere, Steve defends, rooting through the coats to find a whole lot of nothing. It's all light jackets, Lettermans, and windbreakers. His mom must have taken hers out the last time she was here. Robin pokes her nose into the opposite end of the closet, pawing through the shelves. Do you seriously not own a single scarf? She asks incredulously. They're not in season, Steve protests. I can assure you they are, Robin deadpans, balling up a toque and throwing it at his head. Steve ducks and resists the urge to stick his tongue in at her. She'll only try to bite it, and he isn't awake enough to dodge. Not that kind of season, he says, crossing his arms. They just aren't in fashion right now. Do you even hear yourself sometimes? Steve sighs and grabs her hand, dragging her back upstairs. There's probably a couple scarves and coats in the attic, he explains, instead of bothering to answer that. And if we're lucky, we'll find you another pair of snow boots. I do hate getting snow in my shoes, Robin agrees, and Steve nods. The entrance to the attic is a trap door in the closet at the end of the upstairs hall. The ceilings in the Harrington house are high, so he has to use a pole to hook the handle and pull it down. The air that floods out is stale, but thankfully doesn't smell of damp or mold. He's supposed to check every couple of months to make sure the roof doesn't need any maintenance, but he forgets sometimes. Robin shoulders past him to clamber up the ladder. Oh, wow, she says, her voice echoing oddly around the room. It's bigger up here than I thought it would be. Steve pokes his head up through the door, watching the way she stumbles around with her face pointed directly up at the ceiling. Ah, he forgot to clean the leaves off the skylight. She almost trips and throws her arms out to keep her balance, head whipping back around to look at him. Get up here and show me where all your shit is, dingus, she says, gesturing forcefully with her chin. Steve boosts himself up and gets to his feet, hands automatically going to his hips while he tries to remember which boxes hold what. The pile under the dormer looks like old sports gear. The chest under the far wall is all photographs, and besides that is all his baby stuff, complete with his old crib and bassinet. He makes his way over to another pile of boxes. They're thicker than the rest, sturdier, like they were made to last. He pops the lid on the closest one and smiles. Found him, Birdie. Robin's at his side in a second, shoving her hands into the box to grab fistfuls of fabric and clothes. She pulls out the tiniest parka he's ever seen and sits down heavily on the floor. Oh my God, she breathes, turning her wide eyes on Steve. You're so little! Alarmingly, her eyes start to water. Hey, whoa, Steve says, crouching down beside her. What's going on? Why are you being weird about this? Robin gives him a flat look, clutching the parka to her chest.
What?
She says dryly. Just because I'm a sort of not really lesbian, suddenly I can't like kids?
Rude,
Steve protests, because that's so not what he meant, and she knows it. You can't pull that card. I have the same card. And you don't even like my kids.
I like you,
she counters, like that's the end of it. And it kind of is, because then Steve starts tearing up, too.
Rob,
I'm just saying, she grumbles, pouting. Of course I care about tiny you and your tiny winter clothes. You're important to me, Stevie. Soulmates, remember?
Yeah, Steve agrees, a little choked up. Soulmates.
He tosses a tiny hat at her, and she catches it with a gasp. They sort through all the winter gear, moving on to the next box when it becomes clear they won't find anything more than baby stuff. Steve pops the lid off, and the first thing Robin grabs is a slightly larger, but still tiny, winter coat. She sniffs wetly, but sets it aside.
In the interest of actually going outside sometime before their shift, that might be canceled now that he thinks of it, well, with all the snow. He upends the whole container on the floor to sort through it more easily. It still looks like mostly kid stuff, so he grabs the next one and dumps that too.
Hey, look, he says, pulling a thick woven scarf from the pile. I told you. He turns to find Robin staring down at something in her hands. She looks up at him, startled, and he can see that her eyes are rimmed red. Rob, he says, dropping the scarf and reaching for her.
What?
She sniffs and looks back down at her hands.
Sorry,
she says, wiping at her eyes.
You know how I get out when I'm tired. It's just, I found these and they're us. It's us.
She brings her hands closer to him so he can see what she's holding. In her hands are his old pair of mitts from when he was in kindergarten. He'd had another pair before them, the same bright, vibrant red, but he kept losing them in the snow because he'd get fed up and take them off. So his parents bought him a pair that were connected by a long string they could pass through the sleeves of his jacket. Robin presses one of the tiny mitts into his hands. It's so small, it doesn't even cover his whole palm.
Pluto had this idea that all humans were born with, like, four arms and four legs and whatever, she says, fiddling with her own mitt. And they were split in half by the gods, and that's what soulmates are. Two people trying to find their other half so they can be whole again. But I don't think that's what it's like for us.
Steve shakes his head.
No, he agrees. I don't think so either. We're not two halves of a whole. If anything, we're mirror images.
Exactly, Robin says, smiling brightly. She takes his hand in hers, their mitts hidden between them. I was whole before I met you, and I'll be whole after you're gone. Though only for a couple of days at most, because we can't have matching gravestones if one of us is still alive. But you're also a part of me that's so fundamental that I don't make sense without you.
Steve sniffs and brings their joined hands to wipe at his eyes.
She's right. Of course she's right. She understands him as perfectly as he understands her. Before Robin, he was his own person. But looking back, he can see exactly what she means. He didn't make sense without her. It was like something important was missing. Some bit of context that let people look at him and say, "Oh, now I understand." There was always the echo of words that were never said, jokes that were never made, touches he never felt, things he never realized. Like a tool that had forgotten its purpose because it wasn't in the right place. were like these mitts, Robin says quietly, gently squeezing his hands. We're twins, mirror images. Whole on our own, but part of an inseparable pair. And this... She lets go to pull at the string connecting their mitts together, grasping at it like it's something precious and important. This cosmic string between us, it's not leading me to you. It's making sure I don't get lost. And, oh. Steve doesn't know how Robin always manages to say exactly what he needs to hear. That she isn't tied to him unwillingly by some trick of fate, but just the opposite. They're connected so fate can't separate them against their will. It's so different from every relationship Steve's ever had. With everyone else, Steve's felt like there was some level of obligation, or that they only happened by chance and could end just as easily. He's never felt as secure with anyone as he does with Robin. You're not about to make me cry over a pair of fucking mitts, Steve sobs, pulling her close so he can tuck his face into her shoulder. Too late, she says smugly, but it's clear she's crying too. This is why Nancy won't have sleepovers with us, he complains, rubbing his face on her sweater. She jumps and pushes him away. Ugh, gross! You're getting my neck all wet! Serves you right, he mutters. Cosmic string, it's fucking red yarn. Even if they didn't both know he doesn't mean it, the longing way he's looking down at the mitts would make that clear. Don't be a bitch, Stevie. She pinches his cheek and shakes it, and he yelps. I'm telling Nancy you did that. He pouts, pressing his hands over his rapidly reddening skin. Robin looks at him, arms crossed, and smirks. You can do whatever you want. I'm telling Jonathan you made fun of me. No, he whines, reaching out to grab her hands again. Don't do that. You always sound so miserable over the phone, and the disappointment just makes it worse. Yeah, he kind of does, doesn't he? They're silent for a moment. We need to get out of here, Steve says, picking the scarf back up and turning to root through the rest of the clothes. We keep getting sidetracked. Oh, shit, the snow! Robin shouts, jolting straight up like she was electrocuted. What, did you forget? There were more important things happening, she grouses. Shut up. Steve wraps the scarf gently around Robin's neck, patting it down to make sure none of the cold air can seep through. I know, I was there. Jonathan, she warns, pointing a stern finger right between his eyes. He laughs and turns back to the pile. It takes them maybe 5 more minutes of actually looking to find what they need, once they manage to shut up long enough to do it. Robin gets one of his mom's old coats, and they both find a pair of his dad's boots. It turns out all his mom's boots are heeled, and neither of them want Robin anywhere near those. Robin forgoes a hat entirely, and Steve can't even say anything about it because he won't wear one either. Once Steve's reasonably confident they have everything they need to avoid getting frostbite, including 2 pairs of gloves, though unfortunately none of them red, he gives the go-ahead. Robin makes a beeline for the exit, more concerned with speed than accuracy, and her descent back down the ladder is less of a climb and more of a barely controlled stumbling fall. Christ, would it kill you to actually hold on to the damn rungs? Steve cools down after her, wincing when she hits the floor with a thump. Robin rolls her eyes and picks up all the stuff she threw down ahead of her. Just get down here, dingus. She holds her arms out so he can pass his stuff down too, and she immediately dumps half of it on the floor. He sighs and starts climbing.
You're like an old lady, she mocks. We should get you some pearls to clutch. My mom should have some in her vanity, he says offhand, picking up the coat and slinging it over his shoulder.
Wait, really?
Steve gives her an odd look. Yeah, they're like a staple piece. She keeps a set in all her bedrooms.
Robin stares at him blankly for a moment.
Right. Well, we're taking a detour.
What? She grabs him by the hand and starts dragging him down the hallway.
Which one of these is your mom's room?
Seriously? Robin cracks open a door, poking her head inside.
Never mind, she says, pulling him in after her. It's this one.
She's right, of course. Not that it's all that difficult to tell. Steve's mother decorates her rooms meticulously, each one curated to present a specific aesthetic. Their home in Hawkins is meant to represent a small-town, old-money concept, expensive but understated, and the state of her room reflects that perfectly. All the furniture is vintage, hand-carved wood, with few embellishments. The color palette is simple and muted. All browns and blues, nothing brighter than a jewel tone. And all the clutter is arranged in a way that's meant to be pleasing to the eye, making the room look lived in without ever crossing the line into messy. Robin crosses the room to stand in front of the vanity, brushing her fingers over the single Polaroid photo that's been artfully tucked under the frame of the mirror. It's one of the only pictures Steve can remember taking with his parents that wasn't professionally done.
Jesus, she mutters. This place gives me the creeps. Is this room haunted or something?
No, Steve says, which is true, although it doesn't exactly feel like it. It's not haunted in a literal sense, but it certainly feels that way sometimes. Like the whole house has been furnished for the ghosts of a family that doesn't exist.
Let's just grab the necklace so we can get out of here.
Rob, says Steve, exasperated. We can't just steal my mom's jewelry.
Sure we can, Robin says brightly. I believe in us.
Really not the issue.
She holds one of the snow boots out like a gun. Show me the pearls, Stevie.
His mother's jewelry box sits tilted just so, perfectly imperfect, with one door partially open, so the necklaces hanging inside can catch the light from the right angle. He opens the door fully, taking a moment to reminisce on all the pieces she used to wear, and pulls out her white pearl necklace. On a whim, he grabs the matching earrings and drops them in his pocket.
Robin snatches the necklace from his fingers before he can do anything with it.
Turn around, she orders, twirling one of her fingers for emphasis. Steve obediently turns so she can drape the pearls around his neck and fasten them. Definitely a bit of a weird feeling being on the other end of this for once. When she's done, Robin spins him back around and evaluates the look with a critical eye. Finally, she seems to approve and nods once, decisively.
There, she pats the pearls gently. Now we can go outside.
They finally make it outside a little over an hour after they woke up, but God, is it worth the wait. Winter in Hawkins is always beautiful in a way that's different from anywhere else Steve's been. There's something about how quiet it seems to get, how bright. The snow acts as a sort of bridge between the town and the wild places that surround it, making Hawkins feel less like an island in the middle of an ocean of trees and more like just another part of the forest.
Holy fuck, yes! Robin shouts and barrels down the back steps to throw herself on the lawn.
She sinks into the packed snow with a crunch, and shoots back up almost immediately, delighted. It's wet! We can actually build shit with this stuff!
She grabs a fistful of snow and starts packing it into a ball.
This just keeps getting better and better.
Thank God,
Steve says, sitting down beside her and grabbing his own handful.
I think Henderson would have pitched a fit if it was a dry shit. Can you imagine?
Obviously, we can't build anything with this, you idiot, you buffoon, Robin mocks, speaking in an exaggeratedly haughty tone that makes Steve burst out laughing. We must fix this, Stephen. Come, help me build a functioning weather machine, which I can totally do because I'm the tiny second coming of Nikola Tesla.
Of course, your Hendersonness, Steve says with a bow, then shoves his snowball in Robin's face and books it.
Hey!
Robin shrieks and runs after him.
She nails him in the back of the neck with her own snowball, and then it's on. They spend the next 20 minutes running around the yard, scooping up snow when they can, hiding behind furniture and trees, tossing heaps of snow back and forth until there isn't an inch of either of them that isn't soaking wet. Then they collapse side by side in the snow, reaching out to clasp hands, and their gloves meeting in a way that feels more meaningful than it would have yesterday.
We should get the kids out here tomorrow and build snowmen, Steve says, his cheek pressed to the snow so he can look at Robin.
She turns her head from where she was staring up at the sky and scrunches her nose when some of the snowflakes brush her eyelashes.
We'll have to stop by the store for carrots and shit, she says, and the stuff for hot chocolate and cider. We're running low.
Steve grunts.
God, yeah. I thought Erica without ice cream was bad, but Lucas gets scary when we're out of marshmallows.
Didn't know he had it in him.
Don't get between a Sinclair and their sweet tooth,
Robin intones.
Oh, you know what else we should get? Maple syrup.
I think we have some already, Steve says, trying to picture the contents of the pantry. There should be some in there still from that cake he made a couple months ago. He got an extra and never used it. Why?
Fuck yeah, Robin says, already getting up. I read about this kind of candy they make up north. They call it latila, and you can only make it in the winter because of the snow.
She brushes the snow off her pants,
but it's kind of pointless because she still has a ton all over her jacket and in her hair.
She heads straight for the back door, and Steve doesn't even bother trying to stop her from tracking snow inside the house.
He can mop later. We're gonna need a pot and a ladle, she says, like he has any idea what she's talking about. And we can use one of your bread pans to pack the snow. Oh, hey, do we have any popsicle sticks?
Check the craft drawer, Steve calls, and Robin gives him a crisp thumbs up before disappearing inside the house. She didn't even take her boots off.
Steve stares up at the sky for a long moment, watching the snowflakes drift slowly down on the breeze, feeling at peace in a way he hasn't in a long time. After a couple minutes, he pushes himself up. He grabs a handful of snow and rolls it into a ball, then makes two more and stacks them on top of each other. Two twigs make the arms, and he manages to find two pebbles for the eyes. He pulls a tiny scarf out of his pocket. He'd found it in the pile of baby stuff. He thinks it might be his first. And wraps it gently around the snowman's neck. Carefully, very carefully, he picks the snowman up and carries it over to set it down beside the pool. Have a good winter, Barb, he says quietly. I hope you're enjoying the snow wherever you are. He can hear the faint sounds of Robin banging around in the kitchen, and the light spilling out from inside is bright and warm.
Steve!
Robin shouts, and Steve laughs softly.
I need your hands!
He fixes the snowman's scarf one last time and heads inside, not bothering to take his boots off. He can worry about that stuff later. Right now,
It's time to pick Robin up by the waist and spin her around until she shrieks. The end.
Arthur's notes. The next day, Robin hunts down her first pair of baby shoes so she can show them to Steve, and the second he spots them, he starts full-on sobbing. Dustin also makes a comment later about how he's glad they got wet snow because it's good for building, and no one gets why Steve and Robin straight up lose it. Le tire is a real thing they make in Quebec. It's basically just maple syrup taffy that you make by boiling maple syrup and pouring it out onto packed snow. You pick it up with something. We used popsicle sticks the one time I had it. And eat it like a really gooey popsicle. It's extremely sweet. And I think the only reason I didn't combust from pure sugar was because I was, like, 12 at the time. Mike would eat 4 of these in a row and make himself sick. Elle would eat 5. This was meant to be posted during Stoppin' Month, so if you're seeing this in July, no you aren't. Heart. Anyway, thank you to everyone who commented on the previous fic in this series, especially the people who told me I turned them arrow, because it was funny every goddamn time. Supporting you in this, hope it happens again.
Reader's notes. This podfic was recorded as a gift for Fairy Fae 13 as part of Summer Podfic Swap 2025. I know that one of the things you said in your list, Fairy Fae 13, is that you didn't like fluff, but I hope that the Steve Robin platonic soulmates of it all offsets any sugar high of the environment. Because, like, look, the we are two mittens on the end of a cosmic string with each other meets The Origin of Love from Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Look, I understand that the Broadway show did not come out till the very late 90s, and the movie did not come out until the early 2000s, so it is not quite, like, era-wise, yes, but for them to have seen it, no. But look, you cannot tell me that Steve and Robin would not go see Hedwig and the Angry Inch because of its queer themes. It's the entire queer plot and text. It's not subtext. Anyway, the point is, you cannot tell me that they cannot go see that. They would not go see that. Hear The Origin of Love, cry in the theater, go home, and put on their, you know, of course they have, singular pair of tied together mittens that they wear around the house in solace. Okay? In emotional catharsis. This entire thing is beautiful and amazing, and I love it. I love this verse so much. Thank you so, 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 so much to Envy Envy for having blanket permission to podfic. And Fairy Fae 13, I hope that this is hitting those arrow ace tick marks for Stephen Robin that was on your letter. For everyone else who's listening, I hope this is stabbing you in the heart like the best way possible, because that's what it did to me. And don't forget to check out the rest of the Summer Podfic Swap collection that is up on the AO3, because there are, like, a stupid number of amazingly talented people making a seriously large collection of beautiful things this summer. So yeah, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice day.